Welcome to today's episode of the Normalize Surrogacy podcast by Surrogacy Mentor. I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell, experienced gestational surrogate, surrogacy agency founder, and owner of Surrogacy Mentor and Modern Parent Mentor, where our aim is a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey for all. Today, I am joined by Karen Rosenberg. Welcome, Karen. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. Thank you.
I'm excited to chat with you today as we continue our ongoing discussion about mental health in surrogacy. And today we're going to focus on a couple of things, but mainly surrogate psych evaluations, what they entail, why they're not scary, and what surrogates can expect, as well as having a joint session between surrogates and intended parents as part of that evaluation and consultation, and why you feel that's important. So before we get into our chat, I would like to read a little bit about you, Karen. So Karen Rosenberg is licensed by the state of Florida as a clinical social worker. She holds a master's degree in social work from The Ohio State University and a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Texas. She has a private practice in Boca Raton, Florida and North Carolina, where she provides psychotherapy and hypnotherapy services to children, teens, adults, couples, and families. She is a trauma-trained clinician in EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Karen has extensive experience in general psychotherapy, but she is most specialized in grief, loss, trauma, and reproductive mental health. She holds a certification in perinatal mental health, assisting clients with postpartum depression and anxiety. She works in the field of third-party reproduction, offering consultation, mental health screenings and evaluations, and counseling with egg, sperm, embryo donors, and gestational carriers and intended parents. So, Karen, your bio goes well beyond that, and I welcome people to visit your website to learn all about all the amazing things that you do. I'm so happy to chat with you today and bring your expertise to this topic of mental health in surrogacy. So welcome again. I want to just dive right in and talk about the psychological evaluation for surrogates. So let's talk about what it is and why it's done. Let's start there. How about that?
Sure, absolutely. Again, thank you so much. This is obviously an area for you I know that you're passionate about, and I bring the topic of mental health to this conversation is just so critically important. And the one thing I always like to start off and say is that it does not have to be scary. And many times when I have the opportunity to work with a gestational carrier for the first time, I may be the first therapist they've ever met. And so the first thing I try to do is really just help them feel comfortable and like demystify the whole process. So right. I usually explain to them that this is not something that is frightening. It's not that there's something wrong with them. There's not something to determine pathology that they need mental health treatment. So I really, really try to just dial all of that down and say, I call it a pre-treatment mental health psychoeducational screening. I look at it more psychoeducational than it is the psychological screening. That's where it can sound so scary. And that it's just an opportunity to kind of look at the person's emotional, you know, well-being. And when we can look at the emotional mental health as the same that we do with physical mental health, you know, and kind of destigmatize the whole thing from the get-go, I think that helps lessen the load for sure.
Yeah.
So I kind of go that approach initially to help them feel better.
I like the reframing it, renaming it even as more educational. I think that's super helpful.
Yeah, because I think, you know, and as I share a little bit, you know, I'll talk a little bit about what I do, but I think the majority of the consult is educational. It really is. Do I go through their background and learn about their mental health history and, you know, their, I look at it also because I'm a social worker at heart. I look at it kind of like a psychosocial. I get to know them. I look at their support system. That's a huge piece of it, obviously, when we work with surrogates. Anyway, I look at their I get to know them, their education, their work, you know, whatever they're doing, where they're from, where their family is, all of those things, and kind of break it down like that, and then talk about their background, hobbies, interests, things they like to do, and kind of develop a rapport. And it's incredible how in an hour, hour and a half, however long I'm working with somebody, you can really develop a connection where they just, again, feel more comfortable. So do all of that. Get a little bit more of an assessment of what their mental health history is. And one thing I want to say that we have, there's like two main parts. There's the clinical interview part that we do. And then there is the personality test that is required, kind of the guidelines, the gold standard, so to speak. Some practitioners do the MMPI, which is what I do. Mm-hmm. Some do the PAI, both highly valid. They're both great. And it's, again, I call it a personality test. I don't want them being afraid it's something they had to prepare for or study for, like a SAT or anything like that. It's really, you know, it does rule out some psychopathology. It also just kind of, you know, it's the most highly valid test. I tell them it's used for people that want to work in the prison system. Like, lots of people use this. And again, yeah. It does not mean there's something wrong with them. So those are the parts. When I do the clinical interview, I always do it after the screening, because that way with a personality test, if anything comes up, I can talk to them about it. I don't ever just use a test to determine anything.
Right.
The whole package. Yeah.
So I have a question just from a surrogate point of view, as someone who's taken the MMPI, why are the questions so weird? They're so weird, and they're random, and they're asked like seven different ways. And from what I remember, it's been, geez, 11 years since I took it, but it was like, if you were driving on the left side of the road and someone was coming at you, would you swerve or keep going? It was like the most random questions. And I'm like, is this a trick?
Yeah, I know. Gosh, I wish I could explain a lot of that. They ask a question so many times to see if there's patterns in responses, to determine if somebody's faking, to determine if, you know, because it's all just true, false. And I tell people, don't overthink it. Just speak whatever, you know, because it's all about the validity. The test can pick up if people have patterns in their responses or if they're avoiding certain themes. I mean, it's like, I know, I guess that would be a whole interesting podcast conversation to speak to the people who created the MMPI and ask them some of those very things. There's a bunch of different scales that it's looking at, personality traits, looking at introverted, extroverted, you know, all of these like other quantifiers. So I don't know why it really, I'll be honest with you, I'm no expert in the MMPI other than what I have to do for this purpose.
Well, that's helpful, though, because I think two things that I get from that, which is surrogates should expect that the questions are a little weird and that it's going to feel repetitive, like the same questions being asked over and over, because it is, because it's picking up on patterns. And one of the most common things that I have seen in the results are this MMPI result is showing that this surrogate is trying to be looked at favorably, like she's trying to answer in a way that makes her look good, quote unquote. And so I think it's important what you said, which is just answer honestly, truthfully, because it's going to be able to tell if you're trying to skew to make yourself look better, right? And we don't want
exactly
that. It's not good or bad. It's just genuinely, we want the truth, whatever that is.
Exactly. And, you know, again, that's why I do the testing before I do the clinical interview, because it may show if, you know, it may show if somebody's had some anxiety, and it may look like it's a phobia. And if you only go by a very specific thing that was on a test, but when I meet with them, they're like, yeah, I'm scared of snakes. I'm afraid of spiders. So they answered honestly on whatever that the question was. So it showed like an uptick of anxiety. Well, I'm not a fan of snakes as well. So I'm sure my test would show the exact same thing. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Honest is good. Yeah.
Yes. Honest is the best policy when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. So surrogates should expect to have a personality profile of some sort, whether it's the MMPI or PIA, they're similar, lots of randomized questions. And that's typically done over the computer, right? When you're on video with the surrogate.
Yep. The beauty since thank you COVID is I can send these all out remote. I used to have surrogates have to drive to my office for two hours, sometimes 2 hours away, and sit in my office and, You know, it's an entire day now. It's beautiful. It's just done remote. So it's wonderful. Yeah.
I love that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So they'll do that. And that portion, if I remember correctly, is like how long? 40 minutes?
Yep. Yep. That's a good estimate. Absolutely. Depends how quick people are. And I, you know, some people read a little slower, you know, some mm-hmm. people depends on if English is their first language or not. I definitely, I don't think like we're in Florida, we have a lot of Creole speaking, mm-hmm. Spanish speaking. So it's in Spanish. It is at least the MMPI is not in Creole. So I'm not comfortable doing it even with a translator because I just think language, you know, it isn't transmitted as well through the test. So I try to look for clinicians, which if anybody's listening on this podcast and they're a mental health professional that can speak Creole, reach out to me, please, 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 please.
Oh, very specialized talent there.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then talk to me a little bit about the consultation or discussion part, because in total, we tell surrogates to plan on between 2 and 3 hours for this entire visit, about 40-ish minutes being taking the actual questionnaire, the profile, and then the rest of it being talking with the therapist and going through things and answering questions. So talk to me about that discussion and what happens.
Yeah. And also if there's a partner or a spouse. So if there's a partner or a spouse, we require that they're on that meeting. So if there's no partner or spouse, it might be a little shorter because there isn't that other person. So in that meeting, you know, we're talking about, you know, the why, like what made them decide that they wanted to do this and how amazing it is. And, you know, because I screen a lot of intended parents, I will share, you know, and say, you know, they are so grateful. You may not hear it yet, or maybe at the match you will if they haven't been matched, but they are so grateful for you. So I want them to know like what they're doing matters so much. And so we talk about the issues around the why, you know, what made them decide that they wanted to do this. We talk about the relationship, what their kind of their vision looks like. I think the vision is super important. And what I say to them is we talk about this in their meeting, you know, just when I'm with a surrogate. And if I have the opportunity to do the group meeting, we go over this again, as well, because everybody needs to be on the same page. So talk about their vision, talk about what the support system looks like, talk about how they feel about the treatment process in and of itself, you know, what that looks like and injections and where their healthcare is coming from, how they feel about travel, if the intended parents are local, where they may have to go for the transfer, there's all of that. Obviously we get into the real significant things such as, you know, feelings, and we talk about this in the group meeting as well, issues and thoughts around termination, issues and thoughts around selective rejection, and how, especially being, I'm in the state of Florida, it's so critical here right now to how we navigate these conversations and what could happen. And I always say it not to scare them, like, we hope that all goes well. I only want joy. The best thing that ever happens is when I get an email a year down the road and there's a beautiful photo of this baby and the connection. And I love all that. But, you know, we have to talk about the realities. We talk about some of the what ifs. I get to play the devil's advocate a little bit. And I always kind of assess when I'm doing some of the mental health assessment, if there is a history of any postpartum, was it baby blues? Was it, you know, was there any postpartum depression? And that's okay if there was. How some agencies, which I think is amazing, I think it's a great best practice, will have whether somebody's had any postpartum or not, just as best practice, they have their surrogates check in with a mental health professional once a month. I've been that professional when people are in Florida sometimes, and they're doing just fine, you know, but just to check in and have that emotional support.
Sure.
And what else do we cover with the partner, talking about their role? They're such mm-hmm. a huge support person for them, how they were during the pregnancy of their own children, you know, how they feel about their partner being a surrogate. And it's really cute to see, you know, what that looks like. And then the vision of what they want the communication to look like with the intended parents at the birth and delivery, what the vision looks like afterwards, the connection and communication. So those are some of the main things that we talk about.
Well, I love that you brought up that the partner or spouse has to be part of the conversation, because I don't think at least initially when people apply. Hopefully they realize it after they've talked with the agency and gone through the agency's screening. But in the initial beginning piece, I find that a lot of women don't realize that if they are perfect on paper as a surrogate, but their partner is not on board and not supportive, they don't qualify. And they are, even if their partner is kind of on the fence and then later decides, now I'm not really into this, they don't qualify. And I don't think people realize how important it is to have their partner fully educated and on board and part of the process. Because by the time you get to the psychological evaluation, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're having an evaluation and talking with the partner and they are very clearly not supportive, or which is, this is super rare, but I have had a situation where it almost feels like the partner is pushing the surrogate to do this.
Coercion.
Coercion. Yes. That's a disqualification and they will fail the psychological evaluation, correct?
Exactly. And it's a heartbreak. I mean, one of the hardest things as a mental health professional, first of all, I'm not a rubber stamper. I just am not. But I like the people that I work with that refer folks to me, they're so amazing that most of the time they've sent me amazing surrogates to evaluate, right? But once in a while, something comes up, whether, and it's like you said, it's super rare. And I think, you know, the hardest thing is to go back to that agency and say, this is why, you know, I have concerns. And I say, please, let's talk about it if you have any concerns. Because they may have fallen in love with that surrogate and like envision them with the intended parent or parents, whatever. And it's so hard to express to them, you know, what if something really, really intense came up in the MMPI, or if something presented with a partner, or they just themselves clinically, it just was not. I mean, I've had some, thank goodness, like you said, rare, like somebody who had a termination as a younger person and now wanted to be a surrogate to like help bring life in for somebody else. She clearly was not emotionally stable. And not all of that showed up in the MMPI. Right. I mean, some things were a little, but it was through the interview. And I hated going back and explaining, but you don't want a disaster on your hands. There's way too much writing on this. It's huge. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a good point that we need to, that I don't think can be overstated, which is that the whole point of the psychological evaluation and screening in general on for surrogates is that this process is going to be safe emotionally, mentally, and physically for the surrogate to undergo, because we want a safe surrogate, a safe pregnancy, a safe baby, right? We want everyone to be safe and healthy. And if there is any reason for this surrogate that it makes it not safe emotionally or mentally for her to go through this process that she may not even be aware of, but that gets caught during the mental health screening, it's super important that that is brought to light. And everyone is very well aware of why this is not a safe situation for her to undergo. And that's the whole point, right? Is we want to make sure it's safe, because you can have the heart to be a surrogate. And a lot of women do, but that doesn't equate to being qualified or ready, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And right, intention is so great. It's one part of it, and you could have the best heart, because that is the thing. I mean, somebody who wants to be a surrogate, they have an amazing heart. What a gift. They're caring, they're compassionate. They want to help. Maybe they've been touched by fertility in their own life. They had a family member. Usually it's like a friend or a family member that they want to be a surrogate for, and it doesn't work out. So they said, oh my gosh, this could be amazing. I can do this for somebody. But it's not enough of a reason. Just like in a relationship, you can love your partner, but there's so much more in a relationship than just love to make a relationship work. So it's all about safety and a good experience, for sure.
100%.
Good health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk to me about, so you have the evaluation and the consultation with a surrogate and her partner, if there is one. And then you also do a joint session between the surrogate, her partner, and if there is one, and the intended parent or parents as a joint session. Is that done concurrently, like on the same day? Is it like a super day, or is it sometimes mixed up on different days, or typically how does that work? And I want to mention that not all clinics, agencies, or therapists do a joint session. I don't think it's right or wrong. I had a joint session for my surrogacy 10 years ago. So it's been going on for a long time that these happen. But that's not, I would say, in my experience, less than 50% of the time is a joint session requested. So why do you do them? Why do you feel they're important?
Okay. Yeah, I love that, the super session. I love a super session. if it's possible for scheduling purposes to do it all on the same day, I'm the one that has to block out the most amount of time. But for them, they don't have to be on as long, right? So like ideally, and it's usually if we do a group session, it's because I've been asked to screen the intended parents too. So truly, it's logistics. It just makes it easier. So if I work with the surrogate first, and then we do this joint meeting collaboratively together, then the surrogate is dismissed, and then I stay on and do the finish up with the intended parents. So that's kind of how I do it. It doesn't always work that way. You know, everybody's schedules are crazy. So if we have to mix it up and I might do the surrogate first. And then, this happened to me a couple of weeks ago, the intended parent, I didn't screen their initial, they were only just, and I think this particular agency did require it. So I did it a different day, but so the surrogate didn't have to come on as long. It was a shorter meeting. It's under an hour. You know, if I do, especially if I've done the consult for the surrogate, I already know them. It's really this group meeting to discuss these other essential things. So it usually doesn't last as long, unless, I guess, the rare situation you have an intended parent that is a little on the, we'll say, controlling side. There's just a list of all the things. And which is why I love when I get to work with the intended parents to kind of really talk about what that looks like and what, you know, if they have a lot of their own anxieties and worries and concerns, they need to figure out how to get some support through the journey, because that's going to make it really difficult for the surrogate if you feel like you have to micromanage their journey. It just makes it a challenge. Yeah.
Make it difficult for sure.
Yeah. Like, you can't tell them what they're eating for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and like want to see their meal prep. Right. I mean, to the minutiae, it just doesn't work. Right.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot. So yeah.
Two things. I do want to know why you feel the group session is important, but you mentioned that you sometimes also screen the intended parents. And so I want to make a distinction here, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when we talk about the surrogate's mental health screening, it's an evaluation. And it includes a personality profile with MMPI or PAI, right? PAI?
PAI.
PAI. Yeah. With the intended parents, it's called a consultation, because there is no element of examination or personality profile done typically. And that's because there is no exam for parenthood, right? You can't take a test and say, yep, you check all the boxes. You are allowed to be a parent. Here is your parent license, right? that doesn't happen. We can't determine who can be a parent and who can't. But there does need to be the consultation and the discussions and all of the things that happen with the surrogate, except there's that element missing, if I'm not mistaken, which is that PAI or MMPI personality profile. Is that correct?
That is absolutely, that's correct. And boy, wouldn't it be something if we could test literally everybody, if they could or couldn't. Some probably needed it. And right, I talk about that I am not the green light. I cannot determine people shouldn't be parents, because just like surrogates are nervous, intended parents are sometimes and get annoyed that they have to do this. Like, why do they have to do this? This is right. I'm paying for my services. This is what I want. You can't tell, you know, why. So right. I try to soften all of that as well. That's kind of, you explained it really well. I think the group meeting and having this joint opportunity to be together is really important, because again, depending on the agency, there's probably been a lot of conversations. There's the match meeting. There's however certain agencies kind of really work and support the surrogate. through all of that. In the group meeting, it really just gives another opportunity to kind of talk about the vision and all of those things, but also to really talk about the expectations and the really challenging things like that of termination, of selective reduction, of making sure everybody's on the same page. It's not a great match. I just had this last week, intended parents that very much do not want to have anything to do with a surrogate afterwards. It's that sense of it being that kind of business arrangement vibe, right? Mm-hmm. But the surrogate that's not really what she was looking for. And it was hard. So we kind of had to, the nuances around that, we had to really kind of discuss what that was going to look like. And so she really understood that now things can change organically. They were pretty clear though. But again, that's super rare. I think it's not usually like that. I think very much this organic development of a connection happens, not that everybody's besties, but you know, in the long term, but staying connected, an update, a holiday card, here's a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year birthday picture, those kinds of things. Social media has certainly made it, you know, something. So in the group meeting, we talk about all of that. And during the journey, also, how often do you want frequency of communication? The texting, again, it's great to be able to use the video platforms and FaceTime for distance of appointments. So we get into all of that in much more detail. And I think in the group meeting, it's a very reassuring meeting. There might be some things that are hard that the surrogate, because I will always ask the surrogate aunt before going into the group meeting, is there anything that you want me to bring up that maybe you haven't been able to yet? And I'm here for you to support and to help, help kind of mediate that conversation for you. And it could be, you know, expectations, kids, you know, they work, they're worried about how that's going to go, you know, kind of navigating some of those expectations if they have a job and if they have to be away for a period of time. So we talk in a little bit more detail about some of those things also.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I think it takes a lot of pressure of just thinking, I have my agency owner hat on because I owned an agency for 7 years. And I'm thinking that takes a lot of pressure off of the agency up front to establish the ground rules of the relationship and what the expectations are. A lot of that is covered in this joint session where there's at least, you know, like a starting point where everyone feels like they have been heard and have asked the questions they feel like they need to ask. And at least there's a starting point for that relationship. And hopefully everyone leaves the joint session feeling like they're on the same page. And then the agency's job really is to just continue helping to develop that as they case manage. But I think that the group session from the agency's perspective would be super beneficial, not to mention from the surrogate and the parents, to sort of let them breathe a sigh of relief. Like, whew, okay, like we've had a chance to actually talk together, not through intermediaries, about what we want and expect and hope for.
Yeah, sometimes it's the first time they've all met together. Mm-hmm. So, excuse me. Sometimes it's the first time the partners have met, because often it's the surrogate who does all the appointments and meetings. Yeah. And with the intended parent, sometimes it's the same thing. Let's say if it's in a heterosexual couple, that's the intended mother. So the intended father doesn't necessarily go. So it's really the first time everybody's meeting, and it's so nice that they all get to connect. And, or if they've met ahead of time, it's like, hey, how's it going? How was soccer game for little Johnny? Like they've already like got a good thing going on. So I'm just kind of like letting them do their thing. And then we get into it a little bit more.
I like that. I like that. So what do you hope out of all of the things we've discussed, or maybe we haven't discussed yet, what do you hope that women listening to this who are either thinking about becoming surrogate or are in the process of becoming a surrogate, what do you hope they remember about the mental health evaluation for surrogacy, or what do you hope that they get from this conversation?
I hope that they walk away saying, wow, that was not bad at all. This was so hyped up in my head and it was way scarier than I thought, because it's so non-threatening. So, and again, if it's the first time they've met a mental health professional, that they recognize that mental health, emotional well-being is just the same as physical well-being. They have to go get all their medical screening. It's all the same. We're holistic. We're one body, mind, spirit, so to speak, right? So I hope they walk away that if they need some support down the road in their life for whatever reason, you know, not everything has to be a crisis. It's nice to just have somebody to talk to. So I hope, and that they felt supported and that they are, that they're not in it ever alone, right? There's a team of professionals that are there to support them through the whole thing and after, for sure.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that in the last 10, 11 years since I became a surrogate, mental health has become much more at the forefront of surrogacy journeys, not just a piece to be checked off during screening, but rather an ongoing part of the surrogacy journey. And that it's looked at, as you just said, just as important as the physical care is the mental health care. I went through an independent journey, did everything myself, and did not have mental health support during or after. And I feel that that is so important, whether it's a mental health support group that the agency is having the surrogates participate in, or one-on-one sessions, or at least every contract these days should have written into it that there is an allowance in the escrow account for the surrogate to access should she need mental health support. All of those things are relatively new if we're talking about the last decade of surrogacy, and super important and a big improvement. So I think the more we talk about it, the more we destigmatize it, and the more we educate people, people will see like, oh, this is just a normal part of my surrogacy journey. I have an OB, I have a clinic, I have labs and shots and a mental health professional. Like, it's just part of the pie, right?
Love that. Absolutely. I think that's great. And you're so right. The trend has been that in the last, because I've also been doing this like 20 something years, and it's so much better. And it makes me just hopeful for what's to come, for sure.
I love that. Well, this has been such a great conversation, and I appreciate you helping to shed some light on what is not scary, which is the mental health evaluation, and helping to educate people about it. So thank you for your time and for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to have been here. Thank you.
Thank you. Awesome. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Normalize Surrogacy podcast. Again, I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell, and I want to again thank our very special guest, Karen Rosenberg, for joining me today. Be sure to check us out online at surrogacymentor.com if you're interested in knowing whether surrogacy is right for you. Take our easy 2-minute quiz on our website. Also, check out modernparentmentor.com if you're considering an independent journey as a surrogate or an intended parent. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to learn more about gestational surrogacy and how to have a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey. Talk to you next time.